Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up in Music Weekly, Tongue explain how their live performances have influenced a move away from Folktronica on their new album And Then We Saw Land.
Initially, maybe I thought it was going to be an instrumental, wonked-out electronic record, and it turned out completely the other way, so...
We've got Tracy Thorn, MGMT and Fang Island in Singles Club, and the odd couple of James Mercer from The Shins and Danger Mouse tell us how their Broken Bells project came about, and they'll also be playing High Road live for us.
We seem to get along fine and...
We're both odd in our way. Odd in similar ways, though.
That's all in Music Weekly. Rosie Swash is in the house.
Hello.
Officer Old School Hip Hop.
Yeah,
film.
I like it.
How you doing?
Very in fitting with my general image, I think.
You are a very hip hop.
Absolutely.
Kind of gang banging. Yeah. I believe you've got some news you want to share with the world.
Oh no, I've passed my theory test.
Yeah, this is what people are tuning in for. You know what I mean?
Updates
on Rosie's driving experience.
The thing is, I was nervous because everyone says, oh, it's so easy. And you think, oh, God, what if I fail it? People are going to think I'm such an idiot. But I didn't. It was all fine.
Excellent. I'm very pleased to hear it. Back again also, it's editor of guardian.co.uk/culture, Alex Needham. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Alexis.
How you been?
I've been fine, thank you.
Excellent. Have you done any tests recently? Been testing anything?
I haven't. I still can't drive.
Wow.
It's quite embarrassing.
Get with the 21st century, Alex.
No, I should learn.
You should, yes. Anyway, let's move on to our first interview. Tongue are known for pioneering the so-called Folktronica scene with their 2005 debut album, Mother's Daughter and Other Songs. And Then We Saw Land is their fourth LP and comes after the departure of co-founder Sam Genders and a tour with Malian band Tinariwen, two factors which have undoubtedly had an impact on them. I caught up with Tongue in a teeny tiny room backstage in Brighton, which also, it turned out, and I'm sure you can't tell from the interview, was the only access point to the lavatories backstage at the Concord 2 in Brighton. It's all glamour. This is the caviar and cocaine lifestyle of a top rock critic. First, I asked them about their new album and whether it was a conscious thing to make a more melodic, less scary record than their previous ones.
I think there was a few factors involved, and one of them was to try and make a record that was sort of sounded a kind of a bit like our live shows have been over the past sort of few years, and taking sort of big tunes and trying to recreate those sort of moments but with new material. The other one was that Sam left the band, so we had a whole new way of writing songs, and I don't know, initially maybe I thought it was going to be an instrumental, wonked out electronic record, and it turned out completely the other way, so it was slightly natural as well. Come home, you won't be there anymore. When I come home, you won't be there anymore. And you will tear off your clothes and kiss the floor. When I come home.
Last time I saw you, you were working with Tinariwen in a slightly ad hoc way. You did a series of gigs with them. A, how was that? And B, did that have an impact on the album itself?
The Tinariwen tour was amazing for us in a lot of different ways. It was completely ad hoc, and we had no idea how it was going to be when it started, and we only had four sort of rehearsals, and there was a language barrier and everything else. I think as a band, for us, it was amazing just to throw everything you know out the window and try and put a show together with people that you've never worked with before, especially people from another, you know, culture and background. So it was great. It was a great live experience. I think in terms of influencing our record, probably not that much. I don't know, not this
not
record.
Not that much in terms of the sound of it, I don't think. I think, you know, read a couple of things saying you can't hear much of their Malian adventures on this record, and I don't think that there is, you know, we didn't go to Mali, we did a tour with them in the UK. You know, when you sort of collaborate with a band like that, you're really forced to raise your game in terms of performance and being so many people on stage, and, you know, the way that they rehearse, the way that they play is totally different to the way that we ever done stuff. So we were forced, like Mike says, you know, to think about things in a different way. And I think we all really had a brilliant time and we felt very excited. And I think it gave us a lot of energy to get the album finished, I think.
Yeah. talk about this album being sort of recorded almost in a more live way or in a more organic way than your previous ones. Was it always the band's intention to play live? I mean, or did it start out purely as a studio-based project?
It was definitely a studio-based project with me and Sam, and it was had no idea it was going to turn into anything but an experiment in a basement sort of thing. But it soon became a band, you know, within a few months, and it's felt much more of a band since then. I mean, it is a band, you know, so it became, you know, but it was sort of back to front, you know, and it still continues to be a bit back to front. We do make the records in the studio still and then learn how to play them, you know, properly live. And I don't know if every band does that. I don't think so. I think it's normally you learn how to play the tunes, write them, and then go to the studio.
Do you balk at the folktronic tag that's attached itself to your music?
I don't know about balk. I mean, it's something that I think at the time it was great for us in terms of it was something that people were writing about, and when we came out about the same time, other people were making music in a similar way, and people see Tongue as, you know, one of the folktronica bands, and I don't think that there's a problem with that. You know, it was great for us to get for people to be interested in us. I don't know if you didn't know and you listened to the new album, I don't know if you would categorise it in that way.
I think it was 5 years ago. It was a title that was really, you know, apt and useful for a lot of music that was coming out, including our own, I guess. But these days, I think everything's twist and turn so much that that title doesn't really make much sense anymore.
It's also a rubbish sounding folktronic. It's a rubbish sounding. I came with a better one: strum and bass.
Okay. Yeah, that's good, mate.
You can see you're enormously enthused by that idea. Becky Jacobs and Mike Lindsay are hugely enthused about my idea for renaming folktronica strum and bass. Actually, not my idea. I must give credit where credit's due. Dorian Linsky came up with that name, our guest from last week. So, yeah, it's rubbish anyway. They thought it was crap. It's all his fault. I'm a confirmed Tongue fan, so to speak. And I think that the progress over the course of the four albums has been really interesting. They've moved away from sort of what I thought were becoming slightly hackneyed Wicker mannerisms, if you like, to doing something different. Alex, do you like Tongue? Do you like Tongue, Alex?
With or without?
I can't say that I've been following the progress of Tongue that closely. I've been listening to this album, and the Tronica has sort of withered away to sort of analog 70s synth sounds.
It is, yes.
Which I don't know whether that's a bit of a shame. I mean, it feels like quite a traditional record to me. I mean, it's very solid and the tunes are good and, you know, it's well-performed and all the rest of it. But I just wonder whether the sort of weirdness and excitement factor's a bit lacking. But what do you like about them?
I think that, I mean, the last two albums were very dark and, you know, sort of doing things that I thought were quite clever, like taking things like murder ballads and sort of updating them and setting them in these kind of very dreary suburban sort of naughty settings and things like that. They don't do that so much on this album. I just think there's loads of good tunes on it, and it's like pretty chock full of interesting, you know, melodies and things like that. I agree the production perhaps isn't as adventurous as on some of their previous records.
They're right about the lack of Tanarwan influences though. There aren't any that I could
When I saw them, I went to the rehearsal. I was writing a piece about it when they were. They only did like two rehearsals with Tanarwan before the tour, and the members of Tongue were visibly crapping themselves about the whole experience. Yeah. Whereas the members of Tanarwan, you know, these are guys that had ridden into battle during the Tuareg uprising with a Kalashnikov in one hand and a guitar, and you know, you could see that collaborating with a folktronica band held very little fear for them. You know, yeah, there isn't much of that influence on there. Rosie, do you like Tongue? Should I just keep making that joke?
I think it's probably a good thing that there isn't any Tanarwan on there, because really what that is, you know, African blues. I can't really imagine Tongue being better.
No.
If they had African, I can't really imagine that working.
Stick to what you know.
Stick to what you know. I first saw them when they played as the live band for King Creosote, I believe.
Right.
I could have got that wrong, but definitely.
I didn't know they did that, right? Okay.
A long time ago, definitely one of the Fence Collective lot, possibly James Yorkson. I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong.
And, sure, someone will.
They were so like wonderful around him. They were having so much fun on stage. I thought, well, I've got to go and check these guys out. And what I liked about them then, which is missing for me a bit on this album, is, like you said, the darker side of it. I tend to prefer my folk or my folktronica or my strum and bass, whichever you prefer.
Keep using that term, yeah, please. Exactly. It'll stick.
To be a bit kind of weathered and bleak, and this album doesn't really have that edge. But they do what they do really well, which a lot of Folktronica doesn't, is the oddities that they have in their music is incorporated into the music itself. It's seamless, and therefore it sounds great, and it's not just there to be like, oh, look, we've made this weird noise with a dustbin lid.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And then we saw Lamb by Tongue, the fourth album, is out now. Let's move on to Singles Club, I reckon. We'll kick things off this week with Alex's choice. Now it hurts to stay at home and see you flash the mirror balls throwing mold. You can't get a grip if there's nothing to hold. You see the flash, get you right, yellow life and will to look your most special guys, boys, feel it to the head. It's a glance, as far as I know, still bending toward the light, and if we dance until the heart. That was Alex's choice, Flash Delirium by MGMT. They're back.
I'm almost surprised this hasn't been discussed before on this podcast, because
we were waiting for you to come in with your expert.
It's one of the more talked about records of this year. This is from MGMT's second album, Congratulations. And they weren't going to put out any singles from it in a very 70s anti-pop way. But anyway, this is available as a download. The album's out on Monday. And they've done a very extravagant video to go with it, which must have thrown away quite a lot of money, because I can't imagine it getting a lot of TV airplay. Although, not that you need it now with the internet.
Of course.
But I think this record has already been quite stereotyped as it's unlistenable, it's commercial suicide. That has a very distinct tune. You know, it's a proper record. They haven't just, you know, dashed it off. It's properly thought through. And actually, I see that it's on the Radio 1 B list, and I heard it in its radio setting. I thought it just cut through and sounded like a really fresh record. It's funny that this is being thought of as commercial suicide when Foals, who are their contemporaries, are coming back with a record that I think is just like their previous one. I actually think MGMT have got more of a chance of sustaining a career than...
I think the fact that... I mean, there's no doubt that... MGMT have changed their sound pretty dramatically. There's no doubt that the influences they're talking about for this album, I interviewed them a few weeks ago, are pretty recherché. I said, it sounds very much like sort of 60s British psychedelia. I think I went, no, what we really like is like 80s underground bands who were influenced by 60s psychedelia. I was like, well, like who? And they went, oh, you know, the Cleaners from Venus, the Deep Freeze Mice, Television Personalities. And I thought, I bet your A&R man was just over the moon when you turned up. We're going to make a record that sounds like the Cleaners from Venus. But you're absolutely right. I think the fact that it's been talked up as this sort of unlistenable, you know, act of commercial suicide, not least has to be said by the band themselves to a degree, it probably tells you more about the sort of conservatism of rock music at the moment than it does about the contents of the album, because it is a record that sounds a bit different to their first record. It's not, you know, it's not Metal Machine music. Rosie, did you find it unlistenable?
I didn't find it unlistenable, but partly because they set it up themselves, as you said, to be so dramatically unlistenable. I thought it was going to be, you know, an hour of drone or something. But I love it when bands say, you know, we could have put out, you know, 12 great pop hits, we could have gone number one, but we just decided not to. Like, it's such a brilliant thing to say. Could have done it, but, you know, we want to do something a bit different. I think Alex is right. When you there's a lot going on this single, not the bit we heard, but by the end it sounds like Arcade Fire. Like, it's hugely anthemic.
I bet they'll love that.
Really. That underground 80s band that were famously
sounds a lot like you too.
And I think what they do well, whether they like it or not, is pop sensibility on the one hand and a perfect balance of being a bit demented. You know, I remember seeing them play, it was some sort of French TV show, and I think they did Kids, and they had loads of backing dancers dressed as, you know, traditional Red Indians, as in the stereotype. They were on Segways, and they were carrying pugs.
And
they're
pugs.
Carrying pug dogs, yeah, wearing sunglasses, so may or may not have been, you know, I don't know what state they were in at that point. But that's what you want more of, surely. You want great tunes of people that are going to do weird things like that and blow all Columbia's money on a Wes Anderson-inspired way.
All Columbia's money on the products of Columbia. Not for a minute that we're suggesting that their music is drug-influenced.
I also love the phrase flash delirium. It's like lost in showbiz or red carpet fever. Isn't it's exactly, I think that's the concept they're going for. It's very elegantly, concisely expressed.
They seem very realistic about its chance of success, to the extent that, one of the number, Ben Goldwasser, is basically studying to go into social work in case it all craps out. I mean, it's like he's gone for a sort of second career option, which I thought was quite noble, you know. If only more bands opted to go into social work rather than make more records.
Yeah, not true.
But anyway, look, Flash Delirium by MGMT is a track on their new album. Congratulations. Not as unlistenable as it's been mooted, I think, at all. It's out on April 13th, and you can get it as a download from their site, can you?
It's out now.
Now we can hear Rosie's track. Is that all it does?
It's quite long.
It's quite. Is there singing in it?
Yeah, there is towards the end.
Excellent. That was Fang Island.
We've reviewed it.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, that was Fang Island. That's out now. That's Davy Crockett by Fang Island. That bit sounded like sort of Queen, or something. Tell us a little bit about Fang Island.
Fang Island are my other half's favourite band at the moment, so Easter weekend was punctuated throughout by this song being played over and over again while we were doing various things like cooking and cleaning.
Wow.
And it's like a constant high five in the background. So you're like, I'm going to clean this oven to within an inch of its life. I really like there's something unashamed about what they're doing, apart from the fact that they're obviously influenced by, you know, metal or the naff end of metal, the sort of Van Halen tapping and... I really like that. But also, I mean, I know I said Arcade Fire with reference to the last record that we were talking about, but, you know, they've got that total euphoria. It's almost, you know, euphoric indie pop on the other hand, which it does really well. And it's got this incredible energy to it, which I think is a very focused energy because of the various metal elements in there. And it's kind of lovably nerdy, and it is just like one massive high five of a record. And if you go look at it on YouTube, the music video, did you watch it?
Yeah, now was that the actual video?
It's the actual video that they've put out. So they
explain to the listeners for the benefit.
It is a NBA match from I'm guessing the 90s by the looks of it. I don't know anything about basketball, so that's the limit of it, with various relatively famous people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. But what they've done is edited the actual match so that all the dramatic moments that happen and all the crowd reactions coincide with the building of the music. Mm. And by the end of it, you're like, wow, I've no idea who these teams are or how the rules of basketball work, but this is just great.
Wow. Have you been taking ecstasy?
No.
Alex, what did you make of Davy Crockett by Fang Island?
Well, I like the video. There's a great bit where he passes the ball right under his legs and then puts it in the net. It's very impressive.
You can see your basketball knowledge is as good as mine.
But, I mean, I sort of saw what it was going for, but I'm a real sucker for sort of euphoric, anthemic records, but that didn't quite do it for me. I don't know whether it's because it was too slow or whether it was just because it was a bit self-conscious, because a lot of people have compared them to Andrew WK, who I really did like and was partly responsible for foisting
into
the mainstream.
Oh, were you? Really?
Now, I've heard that you said he was going to be bigger than Madonna, that you once said this.
I did say that, only on Radio Wales, thank goodness. and now this podcast, but obviously nearly 10 years after the event. And yeah, he sort of went for a very anthemic style, and you know, succeeded with me, not very many other people.
Actually, you say that, but a lot of people, I don't know who they are, because they obviously didn't buy it when it came out, but you say Party Hard by Andrew WK, everybody loves that record.
Well, I saw him do a motivational speech, and a lot of very young
music career going well then, clearly.
But a lot of very young kids kind of, he performed that at the end, and loads of sort of 18, 19-year-olds came and rushed the stage. And it was quite odd to think that, you know, maybe the sort of from his original hype when they were very young, they'd obviously sort of stuck with, you know, what he does connects with some people. Anyway, that's not got anything to do with this record. except that it's a similar kind of thing, but in a way I didn't think quite as successful. And maybe the things that are holding me back from it are a lot of the same things that people thought about Andrew WK was. Is it serious?
Is it contrived?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Are they taking the mickey out of what they profess to be doing?
As you're being sort of blasted with Fang Island on a daily basis by your other half, is this a sort of representative track? Is this what they do?
It is, yeah, definitely. I'd say this is, I don't even know if this is the most recent single, but it's the one that stuck out for me. It is absolutely representative of what they do. And I think they're being sincere, even though, you know, the name.
No, are they?
I think they're from Brooklyn. That would suggest they maybe weren't be, but I think they are.
Don't start again. Those I'm writing in.
There's a video on
YouTube. It's like doing a podcast with Richard Littlejohn, haven't you, in the studio?
There's a video on YouTube where they're playing to a nursery, maybe ripping off Andrew WK singers out, and that they're just jamming constantly, and these little kids are going absolutely crazy, except for one child who's just standing there still. And the first comment under the clip is, "I bet that child's going to grow up to be a hipster." Oh, I saw Fang Island years ago. They were crap even then.
So that's Davy Crockett by Fang Island, which appears on their self-titled debut album, out now. And finally, this is my selection.
Who's fled? Who's fled? Who's been caught out in somebody's bed? I should have guessed that day that his phone wouldn't take your text. He was a charmer. I wish him bad karma. I know we shouldn't take sides.
That was my choice. Tracy Thorne's Oh, The Divorces, very similar in its own way to Andrew WK's Party Hard. I'll tell you why I like this record. The first time I heard it, I was very, very struck by the lyrics, which I think are incredibly strong. And as the title suggests, it's about watching your friends get divorced. There's some really real kind of punch in the gut lines. One awful line about watching a couple handing over their kids, you know, obviously a divorced couple handing over their kids by the swings in a park. And what struck me is when you're 17 or 18 years old, you know, music soundtracks your life quite a lot. It's very easy to find songs that resonate with you. When you get to my enormously advanced years, that just doesn't happen very much because your emotions aren't as black and white. There are much more, you know, subtle and nuanced. And it's not, I guess, seeing your life is seen as less interesting for a songwriter to write about, or, you know, novelists seem able to write about, you know, in your late 30s and middle. And here was a song that seemed, you know, to be directly relevant to my life and my age group. And I thought, God, that's an amazing thing to do, you know, to sort of deliver the kind of sucker punch that, I don't know, a Belle and Sebastian record does to a, you know, 22-year-old, to a decrepit old, you know, man like me. I think it's amazing. I think it's genuinely astonishing record. Rosie, you're about 12, so how do you feel about it?
I think the devil's in the detail with this one. Exactly like you said, as soon as I listened to it, I thought this is someone who has obviously been surrounded by, you know, the age where people that have been together for a long time come apart. And actually, it's not about heartbreak. It's about all the unbearable little details that go with splitting up with someone. You know, it's not a God, I've lost the person I love. It's God, this is really draining. When do I get to sleep with other people kind of record. It reminds me of the Beautiful South at their best points, because what they did was so inherently English and poignant in the way that they would pick up these little details and make them the most romantic part of the song. And you know, like even when, just then when she was rhyming charmer with karma. It's really naff, but it is also really charming, and it works really well. And she has one of the most underrated voices in pop music. Such an amazing, amazing, evocative, beautiful voice, so full of something.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Alex?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant as well. I mean, she's got a very kind of aching voice, and the fact that it wasn't particularly oversung or overstated, you know, makes the lyrics seem even more poignant. Produced by Ewan Pearson, yeah. The only thing, there's only one flaw in the lyrics, and funnily enough, it was the bit that was played then, the bit which says, "Your phone wouldn't take your text." Phones always take texts. Might not have been switched on.
You can tell you work for the blog, can't you? It's like, I think that's a fair point. I think it's a really great record.
But isn't she saying there, you know, that's a silly excuse, isn't she? Because it's about infidelity, that little bit. And he's obviously said, "Oh, I didn't get your text."
Oh, you could be totally wrong.
Obviously, that line's been used.
Tracy, can we just get the discussion back onto music? Tracy Thorn's "Oh, the Divorces." It's also, I might add, sort of symbolic of what the rest of her forthcoming album is like, which is, it's absolutely fantastic. It's a really, really brilliant record. It's available now for free download if you go to www.strangefeelingrecords.com. If you're on Twitter as well, follow Tracy Thorn. She's absolutely brilliant. She's totally hilarious, very, very funny, interesting. I just really like Tracy Thorn. Love and Its Opposite, which is the album that's out on May the 17th. Right, let's have some feedback from last week's podcast. There was lots of heated discussion over Laura Marling, who we had an interview with and then a brief chat about. We weren't too popular with certain members of the...
A lot of it was directed at me a little bit unfairly.
Once again,
unfairly.
Well, do you think it was unfairly?
Well, it was all Rosie and Team. Your name's on there as
Rosie
well.
Rosie and Team. Dorian. Thanks a lot. Thanks a bunch.
Dorian was being the meanest, I thought.
Do you think so?
Yeah, it was him, wasn't he?
Yeah. Anyway, Westy 60, she wrote, "That Laura Marling review, seemingly straight after she had left the studio." I think we should point out that the Laura Marling review was a pre-record. She wasn't like standing outside the door listening to us go, "Our album's not very good," and crying. It seemed like a bit of a backstabbing. I think he's talking to you here, Rosie. "What is it about music critics that makes them resent comparisons to past great musicians?" I don't know. "The veer of time can give any artist the appearance of greatness." Ah, you say that.
I think our point was it can't.
The spiral carpets. I don't see the veneer of greatness. Twigleaf had a pop as well. "In my opinion, Rosie Swash is mistaking being pretentious with being eloquent and honest. Exactly what age has somebody got to be allowed to write about their personal life in a grand way? Are all 17-year-olds emotionless, pretentious, hollow shells until they reach adulthood?" Yes. Frankly, yes. "It comes across very patronising to be so dismissive."
I really don't think that's fair at all.
Don't you?
No. I said I used to find her a bit pretentious, but she's grown into it more. I don't think that's patronising.
The sniggering... Rosie, at Laura Marling for being boring, then roaring on about just how crazy it was back in their day. Were we roaring on about just how crazy it was?
It's talking about Dorian again.
Yeah. It is Dorian. Oh my, I'm never having him in again. Terrible. It's just the sort of thing a boring, drunken uncle would say when ranting about his youth.
Dorian.
Dorian, yeah. Thanks for writing in, Twigleaf. Phil Jones 87 is backing us up, though. "I'm going to stick up for the pod on Laura Marling. Her debut album was incredibly hard to stomach. And age has got a lot to do with that. You can't listen to it without thinking how ridiculous it is for a 17-year-old to be singing about such things. It was basically a bit like watching Dawson's Creek." I like the cut of your jib, Phil Thomas 87. There were loads of other interesting posts on the subject, but unfortunately we don't have time to go over all of them. But on another subject, Berlin Calling posted in, "I really enjoyed this week's podcast. Dorian Lynskey, the troublemaking Dorian Lynskey, should be on more often. He has a great way with words, and I particularly liked his idea of emo hip-hop. Sure, I'm a player, but sometimes I get sad, too. P.S. Jürgen Knoblauch from Sona Collective was good value as well. For what it's worth, his second name means garlic in German." Knoblauch. Just thought I'd chuck that in. Somebody once told me that the German for nipple is Bustwort. Many thanks for your comments. Let us know what you think of this week's podcast. Also, our singles club choices are Fang Island, MGMT and Tracy Thorn at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly, and find us on Facebook and Twitter too. Broken Bells is the unlikely collaboration between James Mercer from West Coast rockers The Shins and Brian Burton, a.k.a. Danger Mouse, best known as one half, of course, of Niles Barkley. Their self-titled debut album was released last month, and the duo claim this is an ongoing project rather than a one-off. We can hear Rosie talking to them shortly about how they got together and their novel use of market research. Hold on to your hats. But first, here's Vaporize, a track from the album.
I'm here with Brian Burton and James Mercer, and together they are Broken Bells. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
So I recently read an interview with you in The Quietus in which you were described as the odd couple. Do you think that that's fair?
I think people think that, but we seem to get along fine and
we're both odd in our ways. Odd in similar ways, though, that's probably...
Do you even each other out and make each other quite normal?
Hopefully not too normal, yeah, but yeah. Musically it seems to work out.
How did you meet and form the band? Because obviously you both have separate musical projects.
Yeah, we met a long time ago at a festival. And
about 6 years ago, yeah.
And so we were acquaintances. After we met, Brian's career took off and I kept touring. And so we'd see each other, you know, hanging out backstage at festivals and stuff. And so... after my last touring cycle for my last Shins record, I decided I wanted to do something new, and Brian heard about that through his manager, and Brian had the idea of, like, you know, collaborating, writing together, and I thought it was a really clever idea. So here we are.
So when did you start work on the album, and how long was the sort of writing recording process?
We started in around May of 2008 and went for about a year. On and off, you know, James would come down from Portland to Los Angeles and we would record in my studio and, you know, a couple of weeks every other month or so, just over a year's time. And we had about 20 ideas and we narrowed it down to about 10 for the album. Yeah, so we've been done with it for a little while. We've just been kind of anxious for it to come out, but and we'll hopefully maybe do some more again later.
And now you have unleashed the result of the fruit of your labor on the world.
Yeah, well... It's out there, yeah.
Well, I saw a video that you posted on your MySpace page. I guess you could call it a youth market research exercise. Do you want to explain a bit about what that was?
Yeah, we did that.
Very cute market research exercise.
Yeah, it's great. I know. Yeah. Oh, that was Brian's idea, actually, to have the kids sort of get...
Well, they didn't know it was us. They didn't know it was our music.
Right. So what the deal was?
They had no idea. We told them we were from the label, and I was, you know, I'm Brian. This is James. We're from the label. We're testing out this new music, and we want to see if you like it. And it's okay if you don't, and it's okay if you do.
And so we had four kids sitting on a couch.
They were six, seven, eight, and nine.
Listening to the record, and then giving us a review, pass or fail. I think
you got one fail and three passes.
For that one song.
So that's good.
For that one song, they were tough. They were tough.
I loved their descriptions of, you know, why didn't you like that part? It was a bit drummy.
Yeah. Just sounds like the average music critics.
Yeah, it's
more honest, maybe.
Well, hopefully you won't have any fails on this one. You're going to play a live track for us. What can we hear? What can we expect to hear?
We're going to do The High Road.
All right. Thank you very much.
We're bound to wait all night. Or she bound to run amok. Invested enough in it anyhow. But to each his own. And the garden is sorting out. She curled her lips on a bow. And I don't know if you're dead or not. Are you anyone? Come on and get the minimum. Before you open up your eyes. This army is so many heads. heads and to analyze. Come on and get your overdose, collected at the borderline, cause they wanna get up in your head, cause they know, and so do I. The high road is hard to find. Dawn to end all night, that's all she hoped it was. A break from the warfare in your house, but to each his own. And this soldier is bailing out as I curl my lips on her bow. And I don't know if the dead can talk to anyone. Come on and get the minimum before you open up your eyes. This army is so many hands. Are you one of us? Come on and get your overdose, collected at the borderline, cause they wanna get up in your head, cause they know, and so do I. The high road is hard to find.
That was Broken Bells playing High Road at Guardian Towers. It's an interesting collaboration, Rosie. It's the latest in a long line.
I hope you're going
to
be honest.
I'm going to be seriously honest. I'm not as honest as a six-year-old. I'll tell you what, you want to be careful asking kids what kind of music they like, because I'll tell you, the criteria by which my daughter, who's 3.5, judges what is good music and what isn't is off its rocker. Her favourite record at the moment, Fog on the Tyne by Linda's Farm. It's just, I don't know, anyhow. It is an interesting collaboration. How does it rack up, do you think, against the other stuff that he's done? Which, I mean, perhaps we should remind ourselves, he did Gorillaz, second Gorillaz album he produced.
Mm-hmm.
He did an album with the recently late, Mark Linkous of Sparkle Horse, which I don't think ever came out.
Didn't know that.
Gnarls Barkley.
It sounds more like the Shins side. It's more than anything else. And I think watching them play, it felt a little bit more like it was led by him. But that could, you know, that may or may not be true. And I think if you're a Shins fan, there's a lot in this album for you to like. And I think more bands should play their albums to kids. Yeah, to get a parcel.
Not to my kids.
Maybe she, you know, is this one? I like this one. It's foggy, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You see, if you still think that after you've had to listen to The Fog on the Tyne by Lindisfarne 35 times in a fucking row. Anyway, Alex.
Well, when the kid said it was too drummy, that's what I was thinking.
You see, that's because you're searingly honest music critic.
The drums are very prominent. I mean, it's... I always think that I should be more impressed with Danger Mouse's records than I am.
We were saying this just before the podcast.
There's something that's not quite...
They're always good,
yeah,
but they're never like, wow, this, apart from Crazy, I think, which is an amazing record. But
yeah, and also, obviously, the Grey album,
which was an amazing idea, amazingly done. Mm.
But since then, he seems to have retreated into a slightly middle-of-the-road, a bit coffee table kind of grown-up, intelligent pop.
Yeah,
which this is more. You know, it's sort of quite slightly soulful, slightly funky, but it's not really scaring the horses. Funnily enough, it's interesting that they played live in the room we are now, because when you listen to the album, it sounds totally like it was made on a laptop.
Really,
I think so.
Okay, that's an interesting point of view.
One number reminded me of In Excess a bit.
You what? Sorry, it reminded you of In Excess. In what sense?
I don't know.
I'm not seeing any correspondence between that and, like, Suicide Blonde.
I just thought the texture of it is, blimey, this is like In Excess. I mean, it's not a compliment, really. But again, I suppose what I'm saying is, in a kind of very 80s, everything's in its right place, quite manicured way. Mm. There's just needs a bit more anarchy, in my view.
Yeah.
Man.
Right on. Broken Bells by Broken Bells. The anarchy-free Broken Bells by Broken Bells is available to buy now. We've come to the end of today's show. Cheers for coming in, Alex.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
Good. I've enjoyed you being here too. Doubtless we will see you again soon. Thanks, Rosie.
You're welcome.
Keep up the good work on the old driving test.
I'll get there.
Thanks, as ever, to our long-suffering producer, Pete. I'm Alexis Petridis, and I'll see you next week.